You're listening to Finance and Investment Wales, a podcast brought to you by Business News Wales in partnership with Cornerstone Finance, ACCA and the Development Bank of Wales.
Hello and welcome to this Finance and Investment Wales podcast episode on inclusive finance. I'm Gemma Casey, editor of Business News Wales. Female founders, ethnic minority-led businesses, and founders who may have encountered challenging circumstances continue to face significant barriers when it comes to accessing finance. From lower awareness of equity routes to higher rejection rates for loans, the barriers to finance are often far higher for underrepresented founders. So who is working to support these businesses, and why is inclusive finance not just a social priority, but also an economic opportunity? With me to discuss this are Jill Jones, co-founder of Women Angels of Wales, Akmal Hanouk, founder and CEO of Asadakat Community Finance, and Emma Musgrave, operations director at Purple Shoots. Hi all, thanks for joining me. So the finance gap then, I'd like to kick the discussion off by looking at the question of who is being left behind and what the current situation tells us. So let's look first of all at women in business. Jill, you're from Women Angels of Wales. Tell us briefly to start off with, what is Women Angels of Wales?
Business angels are private individuals who play a crucial role in an entrepreneurial ecosystem by providing risk capital to early stage ventures. But business angel finance and support has always been historically male. Most business angels are male, and most business angel finance and funding goes to support male-led businesses. Business angels don't just bring finance and funding. They're also known as smart capital, as they bring their skills, knowledge, and expertise to support a founder. And they're also known as patient capital, because when they invest in the business, they stay with the founder throughout the duration through follow-on rounds of cut funding and helping to introduce the founder to other investors as they go through the growth stages. When Women Angels of Wales was formed in 2022, we became the first female-focused business angel syndicate in Wales. And since that time, we've grown from just one registered female angel investor in Wales to well over 50 now. And that's over 50 women who are bringing their knowledge, skills, expertise to support women in business in Wales.
And Jill, I know there's been an awful lot of research done on the issue facing female founders accessing finance. Can you tell us some of the really stark realities, I suppose, around what those issues are?
I can run through the figures, and they seem to cover every aspect of funding. I've looked at the most recent figures, 2024. When we look at angel investment, 58.8% to male-led teams, 18% to female-led. VC, 79% to male-led teams. Sorry, venture capital, 79% to male-led teams. Just 3% funding by value to female-led teams. When we look at debt finance, 61% to male-led teams, just 14% to female-led teams. This is important. And when we look at the fast growth companies, it's even worse. Just 10% of female-led companies qualifying as fast growth companies had the funding they needed, compared to 73% of male-led companies. And these are the companies that are driving the innovation and the entrepreneurial ventures of our future. As you said, it's not just socially important, it's also of economic value. A recent Forbes report showed how, despite the funding advantage, women-owned businesses generated higher revenues than their male counterparts. And the average return on investment for women-owned businesses was double that of male-owned businesses. So it makes sound economic sense to support these female-led ventures.
There's some really interesting points there, Jill, and I know we'll come back to dig into some of those a little bit later. Akmal, tell us a little bit about Asadakat Community Finance.
Thank you for the opportunity. ACF, or Asadakat Community Finance, we are a very specifically very focused organization, focusing on the underrepresented, marginalized, and disenfranchised communities who are struggling financially to empower themselves And the way forward, we think, is to empower them through entrepreneurship. So our vision and mission is about empowering people to realize their potential, breaking cycles of exclusion, because that is a big area that the financial institutions feel that they cannot support these marginalized communities. And one of the key aims is to build a fairer, more resilient economy for our future generations. So with our innovative ACF, or Sadaqat Community Finance model, we support Black and minority ethnic communities, migrants, asylum seekers, people from deprived and marginalized areas, and financially empower themselves through entrepreneurship.
So how does that work, Akmal? If a founder or would-be founder were to come to ACF, what do you offer them?
Well, we've got different levels of support. What our experience and our research showed that these marginalized communities, they are perhaps not accessible to the mainstream organizations. And secondly, the communities, also do not know where to get that support. So our first level is of engagement level. So we have a very strong grassroots level links with all the communities who feel that they are being ignored in whatever way they can. So we engage them, have a very good discussion with them in terms of what they would like to do. Once we know some people within those discussions are very keen to start their businesses, the second level is about training and education. So we have our special courses, especially for ACF Women Entrepreneurship course, which is very much focused for women in ethnic minority communities and migrant communities. We also have a Youth Change Awards program, which is Changemakers Awards program, which we use for encouraging young people to think of self-employment and entrepreneurship as an option. And once they've gone through that program and understand what is required of them and are fully aware of the pitfalls and risks involved, we take them to the third stage, which is the most important stage of access to finance. What Sadaqat Community Finance has done, and we have tested this model before launching it, was to offer these micro, small, medium enterprise or aspiring entrepreneurs to have interest-free finance. We believe that at that stage, the mainstream is not interested in this market segment because of the risk involved. And these aspiring entrepreneurs or budding entrepreneurs, they feel that interest is not the way forward, because from our point of view, from ACF's point of view, it stunts the growth. So we have developed a program which is interest-free finance. So what we are doing basically is that with this innovative model, we are having a huge positive impact, and ACF is demonstrating how community-led solutions can transform lives and livelihoods, create businesses, and drive long-term social economic change.
Thank you, Akmal. That's a great summary. Emma, let's come to you then. I'm sure a lot of what Akmal has said will resonate with you, where he's talked about community-led solutions. But tell us a little bit more about Purple Shoots.
Sure. So Purple Shoots, we are a charity that tackles poverty through enterprise. We've been going for 13 years now. We've enabled people to start just over 1,000 businesses, mostly in Wales, but now also across into England. We focus what we do on people who can't access mainstream finance. So almost all of the people that we help are people who are on benefits. We also help a sort of comparative to the normal the standard population, a very large number of people with disabilities and women, often a lot of single parents, we find that particularly if you've been on benefits, you will end up with a very poor credit rating. Basically, you can't have savings and be on benefits of, you know, more than just a few thousand pounds. And so the important thing, if you are on benefits and you'd like to start a business, is you're probably going to have a poor credit rating, and therefore most people who might loan you money will say no. So almost everybody that we loan to has either not applied, has been told not to apply for a loan from somebody else, or has been turned down by somebody else. And we think, you know, that's really just cutting off huge numbers of people who have vast amounts of kind of potential. You know, we are always coming across people who are newer arrivals to this country, so former asylum seekers who have arrived and they've got a brilliant amount of experience and knowledge and drive and passion. They are ready to do a business, but because they don't have a sort of long-term financial record in the UK, they have a very poor credit rating, and therefore nobody will lend them money. We find similarly with carers. A lot of carers will want to do a business that is maybe part-time because they have to fit it around their caring. And again, most lenders will turn down somebody who says they want to do a business part-time. So that's where Purple Shoots step in. We do charge interest. We have a slightly different model to ACMAR, but you know, we're a responsible lender and we spend a lot of time. I'm very similar to ACMAR in helping people to be ready to start a business. So some of them attend our business course. Some of them we just work with on a kind of one-to-one basis to make sure that they are ready and a loan is the right thing for them. And it is a sensible thing that is going to actually enable their business to work. Because so often, you know, it's just that little last bit of money that people need to make a business a reality. And it's so small. So our average loan is under £5,000. That's all that people need to kind of get them from a position where they are not really contributing to the economy to fully kind of contributing to the economy. And we've just done some analysis on the impact of our investment, and for every pound that we invest in somebody taking a loan, the government actually claws back £4.20 in terms of benefits not spent, but the local economy gets £14.25. So it's astonishing. So for each pound that you invest in these people who are basically written off by a lot of the kind of standard financial world, we are getting, as a UK economy, £18.25. That's an amazing return. And yes, it costs money to do. You know, we do have to, that in order to get that brilliant kind of economic and social return, we do have to put in kind of time and money. But it's a brilliant return. And also, it's happening in those communities that are often hardest to reach and where there isn't a lot of other kind of opportunity for economic advancement. You know, there aren't a load of brilliant jobs. So for us at Purple Shoots, it's really foolish not to do it, because it provides parts of the economy which would otherwise be languishing with a real opportunity to drive things forward themselves. They don't need somebody to come in and help them and do things for them. People want to do things themselves. And I think that's probably something that all of us here will say. We come across brilliant people every day who just need a little bit of a chance. They don't want a handout. They want a little bit of a hand up.
That is a very passionate overview, Emma. Thank you for that. Something you said there that I want to pick up on with all of you. And we've talked about how mainstream financial institutions often don't offer finance to these groups of individuals. And Akmal, you mentioned sort of the risk profile. But in terms of these potential founders themselves, then, there is research that shows that they themselves are discouraged from thinking about finance to start a business, isn't there? No, that I saw some research very recently from the Centre for Research into Ethnic Minority Entrepreneurship at Aston University, an organisation I know, Akmal, you work really closely with. And this research says that 90%, 90% of discouraged borrowers are actually creditworthy. They just don't apply for finance. And I'll come to the rest of you in a second. But Emma, how do you then get these people that might think, well, nobody's going to invest in me and my idea? How do you change their minds?
It's all about belief, we think. People, particularly with the women who come to us, sometimes the men have more confidence in their ideas, but particularly the women who come, they often say, well, I know you're going to say no. That's the very first thing that they say to all of our loans people. And we say, well, we're not going to say no's now. Tell us about your idea. Tell us why you think it will work. Tell us who you're going to sell things to. And the thing that we always get as our main bit of feedback is, thank you for believing in me. And it's that people just have been told no so many times, or they've been told, oh, that's too hard, you won't be able to do that. Or, oh no, you know, here is something else, maybe here's something you should apply for that, you know, to help you, because you can't do things on your own, or I actually think we're constantly sending people who have very little money on courses to be better at managing money. I don't think we need to do that. I have never met anybody who was better at knowing to a penny where their money was than somebody who doesn't really have any money. They don't need. They don't need to be told, oh, they're there, dear. The reason you're poor is that you're terrible at handling money. No, the reason they're poor is because they don't have any money. But I think because they're surrounded by this negative environment that assumes that they can't do things, or that business people don't look like them, or that carers can't do business, or people with disabilities, oh no, you won't be able to do that. It is really limiting to people. And actually, when people come to us, it is one of the first times that they have heard somebody say, yes, all right, let's think about that. How will you do that? That's a great idea. Let's follow it up. And I'm sure that, like, Jill and Akmal will have had exactly that same experience.
Jill, now obviously the businesses you're dealing with are at a much later stage than the people that Emma is helping day to day, but you were nodding away so vigorously there that I really want to hear your views.
Well, this is it. I also have an academic interest in gender entrepreneurship, startup finance, and a lot of my academic research is about creating and supporting innovative entrepreneurial ecosystems. And these beliefs that Emmy talked about permeate every aspect of the ecosystem. So it's not only the men who believe that maybe women shouldn't be doing it, the screening committees, the investment committees, everything else, but it also affects, as you say so rightly, Emma, it's the way women perceive themselves. They think, no, I shouldn't do this. And they have lower expectations. Women ask to borrow about two-thirds the amount that a man may borrow. We have a constant discourse that women are risk-averse. Well, that's countering the fact that men are widely perceived to be overconfident, and overconfidence is often held to be a valuable entrepreneurial trait. But is it? Because when women do get the right funding and support, their businesses generally perform better. Because they've learned at an early stage, again, as Emma said, to manage to grow maybe a little bit more slowly, to utilize their resources more effectively, and to build a more sustainable and more successful business in the long term. So these beliefs generate every aspect. They permeate every aspect of the ecosystem, and they really do affect the way women engage in business. Women are generally held to be running smaller businesses. They're not really suited for the high growth businesses or deep tech. So it's there across the board. And again, it's wonderful to be able to empower those women to do what they need to do.
Thank you, Jill. Akmal, in your experience, what are some of the issues that you find typically discourage the individuals that you go on to support?
Well, all of the above.
Yeah.
So basically, I think what Emma and Jill have mentioned, you multiply it and compound it a couple of times, maybe three times, four times. If women are feeling generally that this is something that they are being not encouraged, I mean, from an ethnic minority perspectives, from migrant communities, asylum seekers, refugees, it's 10 times the difference. Now, the way we have, as I said, our levels of engagement, of training, advice, mentoring, this is something that has helped us to reach out to the people and give them that self-esteem, give them that self-confidence, and give them that support that they need at the very initial stages. What we are trying to do is to make them investment ready. Now, we do say, of course, there is this risk-averse mainstream finance, because they are not really interested in them to be, because this is a business untested. So essentially, they are excluded from the financial system. So we are helping them by developing their business plans, by developing their financial plans, developing their financial forecast, because anywhere they go to any of the organizations, whether it is just giving grants, whether it's giving financial support or bigger making investments, they need to have a financial plan. They need to know exactly what this idea is going to produce for them, how they're going to do it. So we spend a lot of time developing with them to help them to understand that their business is investment ready. And then, of course, armed with the confidence, having the right tools to present it to the different financial institutions, 9 times out of 10, there is a good chance that they will have access to finance. But in the initial stage, as I was saying to you, the first support from Sadaqat Community Finance is to give them interest-free finance. And we don't work from a loan-borrowing relationship. Our interest is to help their business grow and then get them into a position where they also become benefactors. So R is a very unique model, which actually empowers the individuals and families who face, you know, financial barriers to be able to engage with us, get the training, get the advice, get the financial plans. And once they're investment ready, we help them with the finance to start the business with a view that they will also return the capital only on the basis of affordability, not on the basis of interest. And this gives them that headspace, that headroom to be able to expand and to be able to understand that, you know, they can do it. And what is good news is that once they have shown this track record, all these institutions who have said no to them are very eager to support them. So this is that strong impact we as ACF have to be able to bring them into a situation where if they're exceeding more money or wanting to have more money for expanding their businesses, they can go to these financial institutions, but then they have a track record behind them. So in the initial stages, it is very important for us to be able to do what we are doing.
Emma, is that something that you notice, is that the individuals you work with then go on to have what Akmal described as a track record that then perhaps does open up more opportunities for them as their business is ready to grow?
So we find that it's a bit mixed, actually. And I absolutely support kind of what Akmal's saying, that it is really so important to have that kind of diversity of approach so that people can find the support that really works for them. But we find some of our borrowers go on to borrow money from other people, and that's brilliant. We absolutely support it because we would much rather that they borrowed from somebody else than us so that we can use our money helping people who can't get money from anywhere else. But we do sometimes find that our borrowers come back to us, partly because they're still turned down from other people because maybe they've been running a small, it is judged that their business is too small or something still. And partly I think they come back to us because they trust us. And it's just what kind of Atma and in fact Jill have been talking about. It's about that relationship of trust with people. Like that matters enormously for people still at the sort of relatively early stages of their business. So they would rather come back to us and ask us for help because they know that we understand them and we understand their business and we understand, they don't need to go back to the beginning and explain everything again as they would kind of with another funder. But no, we would rather move people on, and we do when we can, but it isn't always as simple. Like, so sometimes, particularly if we're working with people who've perhaps had a bankruptcy or something in their past, people have bankruptcies not necessarily because they're rubbish with money. Sometimes they happen because terrible things have happened in their lives. You know, they've got sick, a relative's got sick, they've had a terrible relationship breakdown, they've had a mental health issue. It's nothing to do with money. But a bankruptcy, even after it's kind of cleared, can sit on somebody's credit record for decades, and they are still turned down for things, even when they have developed a track record. It's not as simple as, oh, now you've been running a business for 5 years. We have had people come back to us and say they still won't lend me money. Some of them will. And so it does get better, but it isn't better for everybody. And I think we do need to really encourage lenders, more mainstream lenders, to look harder at that new track record that people have created and to be more understanding about things that are more distant in somebody's credit from the past.
Jill, did you want to come in there?
I think that's a lot of what Emma's saying then. It's past the relationship building and why discussions such as this are so important, that we understand what other resources are available for founders, because not every founder is suitable for angel investment, not every organisation suits, but it's that relationship building, it's having that trust, it's being part of the wider ecosystem and being able to signpost to other organisations where appropriate. I think that's a great help.
And Akmal, I'd like to pick up on two of the points that Emma and Jill have made there with you, if I can. So firstly, you and I have spoken in the past many times about the subject of follow-on finance and how whilst your organisation and Emma's organisation are looking at that early stage finance, I think you feel that there still is a lot more to be done when it comes to follow-on finance for supporting these founders to grow their business.
Starting a business is one thing. Sustainability and growth is quite another. So what we do normally is to be able to, as I said, make them investment ready, to be able to have a growth plan for the next 3 years, 5 years. Obviously, it all depends on the entrepreneur, how what pace they're wanting to do or how they will be. Circumstances change, markets change, trends change. So many things change. So essentially what we have given them is at least a 3 to 5 year old plan to be able to see that this is where you will need more money and these are the gaps. So I do feel very strongly that place where either they will start plateauing or it goes down, like any other business, even the multinational companies, you know, they have that plateau. And then either they need to diversify or they need to bring in new money to be able to take what they want to do. So the financial institutions, they definitely need to look into it, because once we have done our part to be able to include them financially and empower them to be able to start their businesses, it is then that larger ecosystem that must get into action to support these nurturing these young entrepreneurs, or, you know, to be able to do that. We ourselves have been thinking about a sort of a phase two of the program. Hopefully next year we are going to be launching that in-house to be able to help people to who have shown growth and who are getting into that space, to be able to help them and alongside partners as well. But it will be the same. It will be a no interest basis, and that's where we bring the equity in, because at that initial stages, there's no equity really. And the interest also makes it more difficult for people. They have just signed up for making money for, you know, other institutions. I totally agree that there are institutions, you know, just like Emma has mentioned, that it is ethical, it is low finance and all that. But yet, in the perception, especially from an ethnic minority perspective, migrant communities, they are not very sure what's going to happen. So to be added another burden of loan is a big, big sort of barrier for them to cross as well. So we also feel that the cultural literacy is very important in talking finance, and to be able to understand these communities at the very grassroots level. So they come from different backgrounds, different knowledge, experience, education. They're coming into the system. They don't know how the system works. So there is a lot of support, hand-holding, wrap-up support that needs to be building up to that stage. And we feel that that should not be lost. That foundational level of support, that advice, that mentoring, that initial finance needs to be grown into a real sort of, you know, regional business or national business to be able to do that. And that's what is important for the mainstream organizations to understand, that cultural diversity that is required for people who are wanting more finance, but coming with very different ideas.
And Emma, I can see you want to come in there. I'm just going to ask ACMA one small follow-up question and then I'll come to you. So the second question I wanted to ask you, ACMA, you've touched on there, and that's about the trust and relationships that Emma and Jill talked about earlier. And I think that perhaps that cultural literacy piece plays a big role in engendering the trust and relationship building, would you say?
That is the key. Because you see, the communities, they sometimes have been let down so many times. And because people do not understand their value proposition, they do not understand the cultural diversity, the language, the understanding of how to approach finance. Like, for example, as I was mentioning earlier on, if we understand their business, then we can help them to get into the trends, get into the system culturally, which is very important for them to make a change in their mindset. So basically, that really demands a lot of work, hand-holding, to win their trust. And over the years which we have been working, people have trusted us to be able to understand their business. I mean, there are different cultural things. Like, for example, a lot of the people would like to meet on weekends, in the evenings, or different days where they can't do. In Ramadan, they can't do meetings, for example. But, you know, so the timings, we have to be very careful. Like, for example, for women entrepreneurs, the best ideal time we encourage is between 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock. We are fully aware of their responsibility. So if you're asking them to come at 3 o'clock or 5 o'clock, they won't. Mm. Weekends, obviously, you know, sometimes they're available, sometimes they're not. But these are these cultural understandings which really bring that trust together. And it's so important to help the people understand that we are there to support them, not making money out of them. So that is very key area, which you will see a lot of the cultural diversity that we serve is very much based on, as if we are working together to develop that business.
Thank you, Akmal. Emma, you wanted to come in. You waited patiently. Thank you.
It's just really picking up on a lot of what Akmal's saying. It's very hard work often to help people who are sort of struggling, not necessarily kind of conversant with the financial world or with the sort of perhaps some of the cultural business norms of sort of white Britain, or that they have physical or mental health additional needs that will help them get there. We're not. That's hard work, and it takes a lot of kind of time and effort and understanding. And actually, we're not saying, I don't think any of us are saying, that we think that the mainstream banks should all be doing that, because it's genuine, it's specialist hard work. But what we do think that people more generally should recognise is the amazing impact that those people have once they go on and start businesses, the amazing kind of changes that they make for their own lives, for their families, for their communities, and for the kind of the wider economy. And that by allowing those people not to be funded, we're really cutting off a huge amount of potential of our wider economy. And so we're not saying to all the kind of mainstream banks, yes, get out there and immediately release all of your finance to people that you think are a terrible risk and would never be able to start a business. What we're saying is actually let the specialists help them, but don't say that they shouldn't be funded. You know, maybe you just need to be diverted. We need to, as an entire economy, we need to understand that we do need to put some money into that bottom bit of the economy, or the people, or even not bottom bit, just the people who aren't normally funded, to kick things off. And we just need to do it in a way that has, you know, a proven track record. You know, Akmal's got a proven track record now. We've got over 1,000 businesses started from people who are rejected by everybody else. Jill is there starting vast numbers of, you know, women-led businesses that might not have got off the ground otherwise. There is now a huge body of evidence that people who would otherwise be ignored have huge potential. And we want to bring that to the attention of mainstream lenders and, you know, say it's worth it for you to invest money in these people getting their businesses started, because they're your future customers, you know, and their customers are also your future customers. And let's kind of build this economy together. We don't expect everybody to have that specialist knowledge like Akmal has, like we have, like Jill has, but we do expect people to see that there's a genuine benefit to be had there and to get behind it.
So Emma, would you like to see stronger partnerships between the mainstream lenders and the likes of Purple Shoots and Asada Cat, so that perhaps there's a model whereby the mainstream funders are giving you more money to deploy in the way you've proven? Is that a sort of a future model?
Absolutely. 0.1% of 1 month's profits, we could probably loan money to, you know, 500 people. Like for £1 million a year, we could definitely be doing an extra 500 brand new businesses. No problem, probably more than that. And I expect Akmal could similar kind of cash injections, could be rolling stuff out to more and more people who would then go on and run kind of businesses that affect the broader economy. So yes, absolutely. I think we should be asking all of the mainstream banks, you know, what are you doing to kind of grow that segment of your market? Because it's tiny at the moment and it has huge potential. I think perhaps the banks don't feel like they have a mechanism to do that, because they're going, oh, well, it doesn't fit our risk profile. It doesn't fit what we know how to do. So we don't do anything about it. And we brush it in a corner and pretend that it wouldn't work. There is real evidence now that it does work. You just have to get it done by the right people.
Akmal, you're waiting to come in.
As I said earlier on, you know, that these are specialist organizations. I mean, if you're talking about an inclusive business support ecosystem, we, for example, Purple Shoots, ACF, Women Angels, you know, these kinds of organizations, these are very specialist organizations who have dedicated their time, their money, their effort to be able to do something positive in the communities. And ACF as such is a success story of what can be achieved when compassion, community, and opportunity come together. And these organizations need to be supported very much through government initiatives, through CSR, through the different aspects of funding, dormant funds, shared prosperity funds, all of these areas that there's a lot of money around. But we think that it is very much pertinent now, especially in the economic conditions that we are in now, to be able to help these. We are not saying to reinvent the wheel for the mainstream organizations. They are doing what they are doing. We totally understand that their financial model is based on the banking model that they've got. They've got shareholders and they've got a way of working, which is not going to be very much looking after this sector. So because we have understood that, we have set up these organizations as specialist organizations to help the communities to be able to support them. So if there is funding available for us to, you know, to scale up our products, our services, I think that is the key area that we would like to request and to see it happening for the wider support that we can offer to the communities. As CDFIs, both like Purple Shoots and us, we are both members of the community finance initiatives, development. So CDFI, as a CDFI, we are doing quite a lot of work and we have tested these models out. And I think more CDFIs, if the government would like to support us, we can really be a big differential in giving the business, the growth business, to the banks, which they are looking for the bigger businesses, which we can't. We cannot, if somebody asks us for £25,000, we can't. But we can definitely help them grow towards that £25,000. Once they are there, then they can really go into it and, you know, support them to make the economy grow multiple times.
Thank you, Akmal. So I'm really conscious of time. So Jill, I'm going to come to you for the final word. I think we've heard some really strong cases there from Emma and Akmal about what they feel needs to change and who needs to step up and empower them to help these entrepreneurs further. But Jill, what do you think needs to change so that we shift the debate on from where we are in terms of supporting underrepresented founders?
Well, we need a sort of national recognition that inclusive entrepreneurship matters, because people tend to start a business to address an issue which they've encountered, and they're generating the product and the services that are needed. So having multiple perspectives of business founders supported will lead to better societal and economic outcomes. So I think we need that nationwide recognition of that and the policy towards inclusive entrepreneurship. But we also need the bottom-up change, which is what we're talking about, which is regional, which is where we can really tap into what's needed and bringing people together to help empower the underrepresented founders. So it's the awareness raising is a big thing, the opportunity for podcasts and things, getting our message out there, having role models, so people who are starting a business can see others who are doing a similar thing, and having diversity amongst investors. I think that is so important, because people tend to invest in people who look like them, who are cultural similarity, and it really makes a difference. We need diversity on both sides, and we need diversity amongst investors to really drive that support for the entrepreneurs and building those networks. We've touched on the trust and cooperation, and I think that's a big thing that many of the women, other underrepresented founders, don't have access to those networks of contact. And this is something in particular that business angels bring to support a founder: access to networks, skills, expertise. it's not just access to other funders, as I said, access to other institutions, other individuals, and just helping the founder right through, as Atman touched on, the growth journey. It's not just the beginning. They need support right the way through. So it's creating that joined up ecosystem, which is inclusive and diverse.
Thank you, Jill. That's a great summary to leave it on. So I'd like to thank my guests for this episode, Akmal, Emma and Jill. And thank you for listening to this episode of Finance and Investment Wales.
You're listening to Finance and Investment Wales, a podcast brought to you by Business News Wales in partnership with Cornerstone Finance, ACCA and the Development Bank of Wales.